ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Einstein on the Beach, the opera by Philip Glass, and haunting sounds of flute and bird calls from the film Sounds Like Australia. Two pieces used to introduce the science show over 50 years. Hello, David Fisher with you, and today a party to celebrate. The science show was born on the 30th of August 1975, and since the very first program, the program's host has been my colleague Robin Williams. Not many radio shows make it to the ripe old age of 50, even fewer with the one presenter. And so to celebrate, a gathering took place at the ABC in Sydney. Scientists, contributors, colleagues and listeners came together to toast Robin and hear stories from the past. The early days, how covering the Apollo mission was in a way a launch pad, and one tenuous moment when... No, I'm not going to give it away. Our MC was the former host of ABC Radio Sydney Drive, Richard Glover. The evening began with ABC Chairman Kim Williams.
The Science Show is ABC Radio National's flagship science program, as you all know, offering Australians unique insights into cutting-edge research, debates and discoveries. It's been presented by our resident living national treasure, Dr. Robin Williams, since its inception, and continues to bridge the gap between complex science and public curiosity, always navigating knowledge and discovery with gusto. The first episode of The Science Show was broadcast on 30 August 1975, so this evening is the warm-up act for Saturday, when the 30th of August date will live again for the true anniversary. Impeccable timing. Any number of scientists would be proud of the synchronicity. Conceived as a weekly magazine-style program, the Science Show from the outset combined expert interviews, field reports and listener correspondence to make science accessible, and it has been in restless evolution ever since, always on a quest to discover, imagine and reinvent. In the 1980s, it grew a vast, dedicated national audience and broadened its remit to include international scientific developments from the shape-shifting through the quirky, and so it went on through the 90s. The noughties launched an online archive and made episodes available for on-demand download, which people have been doing ever since. We celebrated its 40th anniversary with special programs and retrospectives in 2015. In 2024, Robin compiled the Science Show's Top 100 Australian Scientists list to spark conversation about science's societal impact and to celebrate one of the major arenas of Australian intellectual adventure. And this year not only marks its 50th anniversary with live events, but also testifies to the durability of the ABC's commitment to communication about and interrogation of science in all its glory. Over the half century, there have been many major achievements. First, it is the longest running science program on Australian radio, surpassing 2,600 episodes this year. There are numerous children of the Science Show, need I say more than the health report. It has engaged hundreds of thousands of listeners weekly, fostering science literacy, literally nationwide, sparking public debate and awareness. It was celebrated with national events and awards and established a template for radio-based science journalism in Australia. The Science Show has inspired a generation of science journalists, podcasters and educators, demonstrating the power of storytelling in demystifying complex research. Importantly, it has improved public trust in science by always providing balanced, evidence-based reporting. As it enters its sixth decade, the Science Show is expanding its digital footprint through podcasts, social media, and interactive online content, thanks to the Science Unit's digital team. On the 13th of February this year, at the annual gathering of the AAAS in Boston, Robin was awarded a certificate of recognition for a career of excellence in science communication and 50 years of broadcasts of the Science Show. I know because Robin gave me a copy, and the certificate is proudly framed near our boardroom on the seventh floor, a marker of fine, indefatigable work and great communication. On behalf of the board, it gives me great pleasure to say bravo, Robin. Bravo also to David Fisher, who's been the Science Show's producer for 25 of those 50 years, and bravo, ABC Science Team. I hope you all celebrate exponentially. Now to your MC, Richard Glover.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. If you don't know me, I'm Richard Glover. I'm the former host of the Sydney Drive program on ABC Local Radio, which I did for only 26 years. I didn't have the ticker that Robin Williams has got to make 50 years. Although we're going to hear about that ticker tonight and how it required a little assistance along the way. We all love Robin, don't we? We all just love Robin Williams. And I think it's this, what's unique about him is it's this combination of this great seriousness of intent that he's always had of really trying to explain to non-scientists about science, its scientific method, the importance of Australia, what Australia's achieved, all of those things, but with this antic playfulness that always comes in as well. And it's an amazing combination, and he's still got it, and he's still got that wonderful voice and that wonderful manner, but also this playful spirit, and you can hear it every time you listen to him on the radio. It's a beautiful thing. And I think it's time we heard a little bit from the man himself. Come and sit here. Come and sit here. Don't mock my bad knees. Tell us about the Robin Williams before you came to Australia.
I was at university, and at the same time I was at university because my family had no money. And so I actually
They were Welsh.
Yeah. You know what I mean, lad? I was no good boy. And so I did things on telly. I was a policeman. I also did various things with Python and with the goodies. And
like as an extra or what?
A limited artiste.
Oh.
I did what they told me. How do you describe an exploding Scotsman who with bagpipes goes to the edge of the castle and jumps off and doesn't make a splash when he hits it? You know, they had absolutely bananas ideas. Once we raided the Tate Gallery to put the bras and knickers on all the rude statues. And the funny thing was, when I met Eric Idle years afterwards, he could never remember doing
what I call the antic spirit was there from the start.
Absolutely. Learning things like if you do that with real actors and real comedians, you know you don't have that talent yourself. I don't, you do. And so you can work out the sorts of things you might provide. So when I began in the science unit as a gopher, I actually got a number of different things I could feed to the live broadcast of Apollo 16 and 17. And I was reliable. And so the really incredible way I got my training as a live broadcaster, because this was the voice of Apollo coming live. When it was behind the moon, it wasn't actually talking to us, but the rest of the time it was. And we had to be there in the studio recording it nonstop. And that's how I wasn't there for Apollo 13, but the words came through over the airways, "Houston, we have a problem." Having that kind of monitoring, I was providing material for people who are on air, like the founder of the science unit, Peter Pockley. And at one point, he'd been on air for about 4 hours, from 4 a.m. or something ridiculous. And he said, OK, now, I'm coming out, and you go in, and there's the on button, and there's the army phone to the professor in Canberra who can talk about the rocks they're finding. Take over. I was on air for another 3 hours after that.
So that's the real start.
That was the training, yeah.
Okay. That's like the actor falling down the stairs, isn't it? Yeah, in the musical.
Exactly, yeah. Quite good at that.
Now, talk to us about the science show, and you've got a particular vision about why Australia and science needed to be talked up.
Australia used to be a joke, and in many ways this was exploited by Barry Humphries, because when you bought the magazine, Private Eye, there was a certain...
Basil McKenzie,
who was siphoning his python, and he had an amazing trouser snake and various other things like that. And when python followed up this sort of example and you went to the University of Wollongong and everyone was called Bruce, yeah, this is Bruce and this is Bruce Lean and another bot called Bruce over there. What's your name? Jonathan. How dare you? Why aren't... Who do you think you are? Now, all those sort
of
things...
Red A-Day car as pissed as a fart and all of that. Yeah.
And so all that was going on, but it was describing Australia as the leftover country. And if you looked at the globe, there it was sticking down the bottom as an afterthought. And when I first arrived, I saw bush going from Woolloomooloo to Darwin. You know, there are a few parrots wandering around and they're quite cute. But apart from that, you didn't have the eyes to see beyond what it was like. And this is beautifully brought out in the poem of Dorothy McKellar, I Love a Sunburnt Country. You know, you love this because you're used to that. And it took a year at least before I saw what nature was and therefore what science was in Australia. And then the question came, why is science so terrific? And why is the science unit there? And of course, the latter is care of the Academy of Science, because in 1964, some of the academicians got together. And I must say this, congratulations to the president of the Academy of Science, who's with us tonight, Professor Jagadish. But way back then, they said to each other, look, at one of their meetings, Macfarlane Burnet just won the Nobel Prize in 1960, and he did the work here. He did some in England, but he did a lot of the work here. And similarly with Eccles in 1963, you know. And so we ought to have more than what is usually the introduction of science on the news. And finally, we've cured cancer or something unbelievably important compared to the stabbings in Parramatta or whatever. And so they said, OK, we must find someone who can head this. And Pockley went via the BBC and high standards were established. But then the idea was, how do we do it instead of just the obvious fact, 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 fact? And the great thing about the science unit, it had people like Dr. John Challis, who became a director, and he said the whole point about what's going on here is we are dealing with ideas, and the science lives within ideas, because you can ask the next question then. You're not just sort of fact over, finish. And I looked around and I thought, this is very interesting, because it turns out, if you look carefully, that this isn't a leftover country. You don't simply have, as they thought, topsy-turvy world. The birds are laughing at us. The trees, the skins are falling off. It's just weird. It's not natural or something. And then science was showing this is absolutely opposite of the truth. And more recently we've shown, for instance, that birdsong came from Australia and went to the world. Tim Flannery is here, who with his colleagues showed very recently, not only was an ager monotremes, in other words, echidnas, in fact, it was echidnapus and various other creatures like that, but you had modern mammals evolving from here. The story was not that this was the leftover, this was the origin. Why? Because Gondwana was such a rich place and you had the possibility there, the space. Similarly, why are the scientists any good? Because surely they'd all go to Europe, they'd go to America or something. No, they were here. And Macfarlane Burnet, at the turn of the century, was dubbed as a genius by the journal Nature. He invented aspects, with his team, of course, at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute, of the immune system and how it works. I mean, this is incredibly brilliant work. And you look more and more and more at the brilliance there. The scientists were on the highest level you could imagine.
Why do you think that was?
Because there was something to look at worth investigating. You know, if you've got something on the level, if you don't have kangaroos are just deer that hop, they're a bit weird, but they get around like the same old way. It's not the same. It's unbelievably different. And when you examine the birds, the creatures, the soil. There we had not only the scientists who were winning the prizes and building the teams and so impatient to get on with it, but you also had the science journalists, because the science unit of the ABC had stars on a level that was quite extraordinary. In fact, I packed up my gear and went back to Britain, where I thought we'd carry on, and I saw the BBC people. Oh, it's bored shitless in 20 minutes. They're not the on-air people, the management. I said, I can't deal with those sorts of people, because they had such a sneering idea of improvisation and such. You did not get the kind of zest of Monty Python, except Monty Python was put on after hours in the beginning. It had to find its own way. So I came back here and I met some of the people who are in the audience tonight. Max Burke was a sort of cowboy riding his horse. He trained in veterinary science. He also decided he wanted to know more about the arts and went to Belgium and learned about the arts in French. I mean, these are people in the science unit. And then one of the smartest people in the world, I have no doubt about that, called Robin Throsby. And she was there as Robin Hughes. And she taught me how to edit. And she went on to give you the idea of the path, whereas Max Burke went on to start the Heritage Commission, because they had a series about Australia and the landscape, you know, the Ord, the Highlands, and they were doing something environmental years before most people about the science as well. And Robin Hughes went from the science unit to be head of Mike Willis's team, then Film Australia, and she came back briefly to run a psychological series because that was her field. And this was the inspiration for All in the Mind, mm-hmm. with Sanika Dadas, and which is in the top 10 as I speak. You know, this was an atmosphere of the smartest people working beautifully together as a team, augmenting each other's talents and looking out into a world which is just sparkling.
What a lovely story. Now, you mentioned editing, and for the younger people here today, explain how that works, because it works with a razor blade in the hand.
Yeah, and you know that long pink stuff that's on reels, and you're carrying a 12-kilo Nagra recorder,
yeah.
and about 15 heavy tapes, and then your knickers and just about nothing else. And you're going around the country, and the first thing I had to edit, and this is something I didn't record myself, was Frank Talbot from the Australian Museum. He was director of the museum, and he was on One Tree Island. And I had this pink stuff and I was marking it with a yellow pencil and they're cutting and putting it together like that. It was wonderfully, I thought it was natural doing it that way.
What are they thinking? Because you go to places like Canada, what do they think when you're dragging in this heavy equipment? Often a guy on your own.
Yeah, well, the first program I did was from the Pacific Science Congress, which happened to be in Canada, which happens to be on the Pacific. And it was decided by the aforementioned John Challice and Robin Hughes that I should start something called The Science Show, as we've described. And off I went, first class, because that was the rule for public servants.
Chair?
Clyde Cameron stopped that as soon as I came back. That had lingered on because they didn't think that the workers would actually be sitting there. And I arrived at the big campus, Vancouver, where, funny enough, somebody called David Suzuki was based. And I arrived with my 12-kilo device, and the executive producer from the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, who was also covering this huge conference with amazing talent, "Where's your team?" I said, "That's me." Because, you see, in the old days, the technical people in the ABC were owned by the Postmaster General. And you had to ask them to come and do everything, including dubbing ums out. And we talked to them and said, "That's the most boring thing in the world for you to do. We want you to make wonderfully imaginative programs with music and bits of noise and, you know, elephants going by, or whatever they do." And so we had learned behind a screen to do that editing. And when I turned up in Canada, I said, "Well, I actually do everything." By the way, if you've been watching television about what's going on in Canberra, that's productivity we pioneered 50 years ago. The ABC did it. I met an awful lot of tremendous people there and I recorded the program. And 3 months after that, David Suzuki, then professor of genetics, went to the same studio to record the first Quirks and Quarks program, 1 hour long, also midday on Saturday, also repeated as we were then on Tuesday, and we're sort of sister programs working together, but they had to be a good team.
You mentioned the 50 years. Shall we get a little sense of it? We've got a little video we want to share with everybody.
Hello, I'm Robin Williams. I produce The Science Show on ABC Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
In the old days, they thought that scientists were the sort of people they used to fear at school. The people who told you something you couldn't understand and did not want to know. And I remember running around in Australia talking to scientists and asking them what they would say if they were having a cup of tea or going down the pub. And they were completely different. They had fantastic stories, incredible enthusiasm, and you could fully comprehend what they were talking about.
The Science Show began on location in Canada 25 years ago this week. We shall rebroadcast part of that first program. It resonates strangely with today's preoccupations. Another oil crisis.
This beautiful wet city on the western seaboard of Canada has been the venue for the past 2 weeks of the 13th Pacific Science Congress. And like every science congress I've ever attended, we've had a mixture of two things.
I'm thrilled by people like Vicky Meadows, who is, well, 27 years of age, a brilliant astronomer with a world reputation. She's not a household name in this country, but there she is, a young Australian woman, and with immense ability, and she was the person who tracked that great comet that slammed into Jupiter.
It seemed to me appropriate to bring the scientific aspect of Her Royal Highness to science broadcasting in a way that would preempt the event that the world was looking forward to most of all. In other words, the royal birth.
Producer Polly Rickard has known Robin Williams since 1975 and admits he has his faults.
Is he a dag?
Oh, yes, he's the biggest dag. I actually bought him handkerchiefs a couple of years ago because I got sick of looking at these handkerchiefs.
I like wearing sandals because Australia is hot and my feet keep cool.
We don't approve of the sandals at all. We've tried to get the sandals away from him by fair means and foul, but it's impossible.
Still got a few more interviews to do. I'm not quite sure when I'm writing a music bridge whether you can choose something that I'm thinking of because it's on a record.
Well, we are entangled.
Entangled, so, that's right. Yeah,
we're entangled. So you think it, I'll know it.
That'll be good.
Hi, this is The Science Show, and I'm Belinda Smith, keeping Robin Williams' seat toasty and warm for the next few weeks.
Anything dramatically different about doing plants from that point of view?
Well, the hardest thing is that at least, you know, the damn things are there.
When I first came to Australia, Robin was already running The Science Show on national radio, and not only was it quite obviously the best program on national radio, it was the best science show in the world. Scientists internationally loved being on it. They made themselves available because they were absolutely delighted to speak openly about science to somebody who could pretend to understand aspects of what they were saying.
Robin, thank you, thank you, thank you for being you. Your incredible charm and fierce curiosity have made the big ideas accessible to millions of Australians without denuding any of the facts of their wondrous complexity.
So, Robin, thank you for 50 years of clarity and mischief, for asking sharp questions and making the answers sing.
Maintaining the interest is really maintaining the interest in life and nature. That's not hard.
Are you crying yet? Because if you are, we don't want to see the hanky. Tell us about a couple of the serious things, because the asbestos story comes to my mind, Matt Peacock's story. So there's been a number of times where really the country's been changed by The Science Show.
It's really, without question, we give the science unit and the ABC its benefit, because when someone who was slightly constrained, Matt Peacock, in News and Current Affairs, because the rules were fairly strict, and we said, tell the story, it's so important, we recognise that, he then had a go, often being accused of running a campaign or something. But how do you run a campaign or dilute it when you're talking about something that's either going to kill people or not? So he kept at it and he kept at it, and more the evidence came through. Now, this is one thing about the science funding that is rather interesting, because the time it took to get clear on asbestos was too long. Because science, in some ways, if you're not funding it properly, it takes years. And the consequences of that, a bit like if you let war go on for too long a time. Because science is the most future-orientated subject almost in the world. And anyway, he was free to do that, and I adapted various things. For example, when a neighbour of ours in Balmain had his roof fall down, and he suddenly got a bit of a cough, and he was a doctor, and he was suspicious of what it was. And of course, it turned out to be mesothelioma. And I adapted. I thought, well, what can I do? Maybe it's for the public interest if I ask this man, Dr. Jim Holmes, to write a meso diary. And he did about 5 broadcasts, about 4.5, 5 minutes long each week, till he died. Mm. And that told the story about what you look out for, what asbestos really means, how it's there around you when you don't notice, take it further. And so what Matt Peacock did earned him the most wonderful accolades later on, but it took a long time.
Yeah, what a wonderful story. Norman Swan, please come up, Norman Swan. So Norman is the second longest serving person in the ABC Science Unit. Tell us about your relationship with Robin and the show and all of that.
So it goes back 43 years. I was 12 when I joined the science unit. In those days, we had interviewing committees, new people joined the ABC, and Malcolm Long, who I think is in the audience, was on the interviewing panel, Robin was, Kirsten Garrett, and amazingly, I got the job, and my life changed forever. I never did a media degree. I learnt in the old-fashioned way as an apprentice. I sat by Robin's side, and what I know about radio, broadcasting, script writing, editing, comes from Robin.
What was special? I mean, you'd had your ear in England and in Scotland. What was different about the way that under Robin and the other people we've heard about, we were doing science in this country?
I think you need to put context around what the ABC was like in those days. So you had an incredibly conservative management in Elizabeth Street. You had television over at Gore Hill, and you had various aspects of radio around King's Cross. And where the Seidler building is now is where we used to have to run up the hill to do our broadcasting from. And in our building was the nest of radicals. So there was Double J. There was another floor which was called Toxin Documentaries, which essentially was a nest of Stalinism. And then there was us on the top floor, the science unit. Yeah. And I didn't quite get this to begin with. And then a newsletter would arrive on your desk called Steam Power, which was anonymous. And it used, and people used to say, oh, you'll find out who wrote that eventually. And I did find out who wrote it. And it was this scurrilous information about what was going on in Elizabeth Street in management and so on.
Oh, we need it back.
That's right. We do. Well, there was a sense of, I mean, this is what Kim goes on about all the time. There was a sense that you could achieve anything. So there was this paradox of incredibly conservative managers, risk averse, and there was a sense that you could just get away with stuff. And you got away with stuff at times of the day when you thought nobody was going to be listening, like 8 o'clock, 8:30 at night, weekdays, double take, the beginnings of background briefing. The organisation was so concerned, there was even an ASIO plant on the same floor as Toxin Documentaries who would be photocopying late at night. That was the environment. So the science show was really... It's important that it was called the science show. So it was about entertainment, it was about accessibility, but it was also subversive. It was of that building. It wasn't just what Robin was saying about facts and knowing the next question. It was subversive. It was about the social, political, ethical context of science. That's why it's lasted. It wouldn't have lasted if it was about facts. It's about context. And that's what Radio National is still about. It's about context.
Now, right at the beginning, I confess that I didn't have the ticker to do a show for 50
Neither
years.
Neither does Robin, actually.
But the ticker has had some help.
Yes.
Tell us that story.
So I get a phone call saying that Robin, it's from Pamela, and I got a phone call saying Robin's collapsed. Robin was chair of the Australian Museum at that point, and he'd collapsed at an event in College Street, and he'd been taken to Sydney Hospital. And Pamela was concerned that he wasn't being well looked after. Could I come in? So I come in and I go into the emergency department ward, and Sydney Hospital at that stage was being shut down. Effectively, it was all being moved out to Westmead. So I walked in, and as I walked in, the resident was about to discharge Robin. And if I called the ward cleaner over and said, what do you think about that man over there? So he doesn't look well. He looked terrible. He was white. And so I said to the resident, has anybody else seen him? You know, what happened? You know, as a registrar? No, no. Don't you think the registrar should see him? And they all get really pissed off with me. And they all walk out, including the nursing staff. And I'm left in the ward by myself with Robin. And he arrests on me.
I swallowed a pill. And the act of swallowing a pill blocked the vagus connection with the heart. It's called heart block. And I stopped.
As an amateur cardiologist, as everyone in the room, you can just see a flat line there. And then you'll see a dip, which is actually where, because I couldn't get the end of the bed down to start resuscitation, so he was sitting up, dead. And so what we're taught to do in medical school, which I don't think they teach them anymore because it doesn't usually work, is it's called a precordial thump, where you hit the person really hard here. So I got what I'd always wanted to do, to get to hit Robin.
And you still do it.
And thumped him really hard.
And we can see the bounce, can't we?
Yeah, the bounce is there, and then the heartbeat comes back.
Please thank Norman Swan.
Hey!
Thank him twice for saving him.
Oh.
Before we introduce our next guest, talk to me about the hoaxes. They've been mentioned a few times today.
Well, partly it was inspired by the fact that having been on so many Monty Pythons and Gwydyrs and such like, you can see how ideas can be played with and be fun and get the attention. But you see, at that time, way back, and still going to some extent, you had Uri Geller's Bending Spoons, you had von Daniken leading people up the garden path, and there's a tendency out in the rear. Did I talk about misinformation, you know, the spread by the Tower of Babel called social? I don't ever use any social media, couldn't stand them. But there were ways in which, at that point, science was being diminished because they were being so responsible, waiting for the evidence to come and having extra checks and on air our having to have balance. You see, with asbestos, how are you going to balance something dealing with a material that's going to kill you by saying it won't? So that was the time. And so I thought, well, if we can show through imaginative script writing, and you know, you have to be good actors as well. That's very important. Because if you just pretend to be someone, I mean, John Clarke was a genius at some of this stuff, an actor as well as a person doing his own stuff. So we had every 100 science shows, there'd be something like the fossil beer can or the live broadcast of the birth of Princess Diana's baby, and got the sign over there. And we had this imitation of Richard Dimbleby, you know, the low tones and clip-clop and all that stuff, and always linked to something to do with a real science. Now, at the time when you're talking about the royal birth, there had been a development of frozen embryos in Australia. A colleague, actually, of Max Burke's over there, who did some very, very good work on that. And so there was also a debate about governors general and whether we should keep having them sent over from Britain. Prince Andrew might be next, you know. And so those sorts of things aren't necessarily a good idea. But what if you could have a local person born here or living here who then acquires royalty, and you get the best of both worlds. And what if you had the Charles and Diana going around the world, putting a frozen embryo in each of the fridges of Government House, and that way you could have implantation, and that would no problem. And the question was, physiologically, when did royalty enter the protein and the plasma? And we decided it had to be at the time of orgasm. And the question was, does royalty have orgasms? Which turned out to be a real question to ask at the time. Apparently they didn't, so they split.
You mentioned the great John Clarke. His daughter is here, Lauren Clarke. Creator of the Fitzroy Diaries and actually of a new film about her dad. Tell us about your dad and particularly this side, antic side of the science show.
Well, to me, that is the science show. My father's from New Zealand, and the story of him arriving in 1977 in Australia and having to start his career from scratch. There are a couple of heroes in that story, and one of them sitting next to me, because it turns out Robin had been playing some Fred Dagg bits off records, I think, as part of the show for a couple of years. And so he had this sort of prepared ecosystem into which my dad could float and exercise sort of freewheeling tomfoolery of the highest order. And like you said earlier, I think the ideas being at the centre of it was just so appealing. And it meant that at a time when he was in between times a little bit, he'd been this character called Fred Dagg in New Zealand. It had sort of reached its peak and got a little bit too big to carry itself. Here he was in a new country and he was armed with only curiosity. He didn't know how football worked. He didn't know much. And so he was, in a way, that curiosity and the kind of interest in ideas is what drove him at that point in his life anyway. And then to find this was just such a gift. So, yeah, I always knew, and then, of course, I became a listener. And I think as a listener, and particularly I'm one of those people who is a little bit, was at school, a little bit frightened of science. I thought it was test tubes and cutting rats open and things. But if you listen to the science show, you can be somebody who doesn't identify as a scientist. You can be somebody who's interested in ideas. That's a really beautiful thing. And, yeah, when I started working in radio myself and did the Fitzroy Diaries, I came across Robin as a grown human adult and pretended to be a normal human when I met him in person. But it's interesting because I think it, all of those things you're talking about, you're seeing things from a science perspective. But to me, listening to the show, it is storytelling and it is the arts. It is all of those. You listen to it and there are layers to it, and there is just even the way you'll do an intro to something. You can't get out of the car. You have to sit there and wait, find out.
That's one of the things about the science show is you could list the Nobel Prize-winning writers, for instance, who've been on the show over the years. You've always tried to, you know, C.P. Snow wrote about the two cultures in 1955, I think. But you've always been trying to build bridges between the two.
Yes, because, you see, many of the characteristics and the two Clarks, John departed, but also Lauren, exhibit what is a characteristic of the scientist of looking at ordinary things. And you do this too in your writing. And you notice in Fitzroy the people in the street. And that's exactly the same as a natural history person going out from an Australian museum and looking to see what's in a quadrant or what's in a patch of forest and then seeing relationships. And I mentioned not getting my eye in when I was looking at forest. That's just bush going from north to south and that's it. No, the subtlety of it takes observation and learned observation at that. And then you can see relationships that escape just glancing. And so you're doing something scientific as well, and you're well equipped to take it further. That's the point. And you also relish, as your books do, what ordinary nature and people can be like. Artists do this with the faces of people in the marketplace. Be aware of your surroundings. And that's why I despise the social media, because they're just giving it to you in atomized bits. There's so much more to it. And that's what you do, and that's what John did. And it's no coincidence, really, that when he died and I was shattered, he was there out in the bush looking at birds.
So open your eyes is the advice to scientists and non-scientists alike. Can you please thank Lauren Clark? And look out for the movie, which is coming soon. I said right at the beginning that we've got some of Australia's great scientific minds in this room tonight to celebrate this 50th anniversary. One of them is Dr. Fiona Stanley, who's going to come and join us. Tell us about you, Robin, and the science show.
Oh, well, I've got lots of stories, and I really want to put the perspective of what it's like to be a scientist and to have benefited from the science show. And I think it's been a really serious contribution to Australian science, and we need that. So I want to start by my first interview with Robin, which was for Quantum, and you were interviewing me at the Children's Hospital in Sydney about folate and neural tube defects, spina bifida. 30-minute interview. Perfect interview. I was as nervous as anything. And at the end of that interview, oh, you were absolutely spot on. 30 minutes was great. And the sound recorder said, "You've got a beautiful voice. You could do dog food ads." I thought, great, I'll keep that in mind. I was very privileged to be on the board of the ABC from 2011 to 2015 until I was told to walk away. But one of the things I wanted to do for the ABC was to do a review of science broadcasting and to compare the ABC with the rest of the world. Because, of course, you always assume that Australia isn't as good. So I compared, I went to CBC in Canada and I went to the BBC. I did this on my own bat. I was there for conferences and I didn't charge the ABC a thing and I didn't go first class. I went, yeah, anyway. So I talked to Sid Katz in the CBC. I talked to Deborah Cohen in the BBC. I talked to lots of people. And we had the best, they said, we had the best science broadcasting in the world. Now, this wasn't just the science show. This was the whole gamut of science on the ABC, from kids' shows right through to blockbusters. And I wanted to have a look at that whole thing. And I came back absolutely excited and inspired. Robin is the best science broadcast in the world. And that we've now done this wonderful research to show this, of course. So, and I came back with these recommendations, which I didn't know if the board was going to take up, which was to appoint somebody who was going to oversee science for the ABC. I had found this fellow called Jonathan Webb, who is in London, who actually from Adelaide did neuroscience PhD, you know, there he is. And I thought, gosh, you know, that would be great if we get someone like Jonathan Webb, who'd gone from Oxford and done his neuroscience. I hope this is right, Jonathan, and then had gone to the BBC. But I just felt really excited that that review was done and that it was implemented and that now I'm very excited about what's happening in science.
Do you think that there are cases where scientists have been inspired, either as kids or as grown-up scientists, by the science show?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the other thing that's great for scientists is we need the in-depth investigative journalism. To get a 60-second grab to explain the nuances and the difficulties of methodologies and all those things, it's impossible. So we have these wonderful interviews where we can go in depth and say, well, look, actually the methodology is difficult and it's hard to interpret and I don't know if this is really the case, but, and you can actually do that. And you can do that in subsequent programs. You've talked about the asbestos story, but I've got lots of other stories. I mean, we got up the cot death story on the science show and that changed. I mean, it's amazing that you could actually change the risk of cot death by turning a baby over. This is the kind of stuff that the science show was able to help us with. But yes, I think it does inspire kids. It really does. And Lauren, you started being inspired as a young person. There's another story I've got, which I want, you know, you're going to throw me off soon, so I'm going to get the stories out. But other people listened to the science show, and there was a demographer listening in Western Australia called Anne Reed, Dr. Anne Reed. She heard me interviewed on the science show with Robin, and she rang me 2 days later and she said, I want to come and work with you. So she came and did a PhD, and the rest, as they say, so she worked on the cot death stuff. You can recruit people through the science show to enrich your lab group. I just want to also acknowledge that Carol Bowers here, who did all of the research on neural tube defects and folate somewhere, Carol, and she wasn't on the science show because you pushed me into it rather than Carol. But the other thing you did was to really push women and to encourage women in science to...
There were so many who did such brilliant things.
But, you know, we were given a hard time.
I know. Well, there are two
you didn't.
People,
you acknowledged
one of them
us.
A woman, who invented a new field of science called radio astronomy, a whole new field of science. And there are more examples like that. But I also want to mention various people who have helped from the outside, such as Pauline Newman's here. She was an executive producer in the BBC and then with us. And stories from, well, latterly Brazil have just turned up, which I'm going to have on. And Sharon Carlton, who's done 40 science shows, portraits of Australian scientists. Who is Howard Florey? Who are these other people you can mention? Miriam Rothschild, that's world expert on fleas. And Charles wanted to have her expertise on insects to plant at Highgrove different plants to attract the butterflies. And so he got together with her and we thought this is a story because there was something wonderful about her work. And so Sharon said, yes, she'd love to do it. But of course, interviewing Charles might have been slightly tricky, partly because he's not in Australia and partly because it's on a big expensive plane. And so I phoned the then Governor General, Bill, and he was very interested in science and used to phone up now and then, ask for which books to read. And I said, we need to go and do an interview with Prince Charles. Could you ask the palace whether that's okay? And 2 days later, the answer came back, absolutely yes. The next question, how are we going to fly her there? And of course, well, Richard Carlton was then with 60 Minutes and he had about 2 million frequent flyer points. So she turned up, went to the palace, the offsiders told her what she couldn't ask, not this, not environment, not anything else. Charles walked in and said, hello, ask me anything. And she did. And back she came. And we've got all of these outside people doing work for the science show and other programs willingly in all sorts of ways we couldn't manage otherwise. As you say, the outsiders helping us just like that.
We've had such a fun time tonight. I know you want to thank a few people before we finish. Oh, you've got to.
Let's see if I can remember their name. I'd like to.
Please thank Fiona Stanley.
I'd like to acknowledge from the chief scientist, Tony Haymet. He's over there. He used to be the head of the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in Australia. I'd like to say thank you again to Sharon Carlton for that wonderful work and Pauline Newman for being so available so often. David Fisher, of course. We've been married for 25 years. Kerry Chatfield, are you in the room? You're over there. Would you please stand up? The support staff are often neglected, especially. We depend on people like you from day to day, every day. Thank you for your work. The techs and the sound mixers, Lynn Malcolm was in the science show and then pioneered All in the Mind as well, after the example from Robin Hughes. And she was the EP and a leader like no other. Jonathan Webb, you've heard about. He's getting taller all the time. It's quite wonderful. And I met him when he was in the BBC.
I fear we're getting shorter.
It's I know. Anne Jones, what the duck? My kids actually used to come, that's Tom and Jess, to the science unit when they were 5 and 8 and in a booth record their own science shows with lots of reference to ABBA and singing Money, 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 which is just what the scientists need. Jonica helped organise tonight with Patria. Patria from the ABC, Jonica from my house. We're married. And she's broadcast brilliantly. She was on Catalyst for 20 years. She knows everything about how to organise a good party and to keep me out of the way while doing it. Richard Glover, you're a genius. And the fact that your email is glover. That reminds you. Lindsay Sharp, who was founding head of the Powerhouse, and was on air with me looking at the site before anything was built. And he was being listened to as we walked around by Jill Rann, who said, Neville, come and listen to this. And the Powerhouse happened, they said, as a result. David Lindenmeyer, similarly, in 1983, was listening to Peter Hunt, one of the geniuses in the science unit, who was doing forestry work, and decided to concentrate on forestry, and then He became a professor and has written the most brilliant books internationally on how to save the forests.
Let's now hear from Jonathan Webb, who was spoken about so beautifully by Fiona Stanley. I'm curious to know if he really is getting taller by the day. Let's find out.
Thank you, Richard. And what a privilege to be leading the Radio National Science Unit on an occasion like this one. But over the past few months, as we've been organising this evening, a bunch of radio producers getting a crash course in event management alongside trying to do our actual jobs, there were times when I found myself wondering, in the world of 2025, whether the time was right to be celebrating one person for doing the same thing for a really long time. Especially charming and eminent and towering though that figure may be, a person who is comparatively old, comparatively white and comparatively male. I feel I can make these observations because I am also male and white and my knees are giving out. However, the more that I thought, and I spoke to Robin himself, of course, I realised that this is a celebration of so, so much more than one man. It's a celebration of an institution, because that's what the science show is. And at this moment in 2025, institutions around the world are suffering from neglect and often from outright attack. And they are so valuable, because that's what you create when the ABC itself, an institution that must be defended, commissions and supports a program about science for five decades. An institution is a structure which allows people to gather. It says something about what's important, and it holds space for ideas. And as you've heard, it launches careers and it makes change. And that is one hell of a reason for a party. I'm very aware I'm the last thing standing between you and some food and drink out in the foyer. And Robin's already thanked an amazing number of people, many of whom are here, who've contributed to the science show. So I'll make my thank yous briefer than the ones I had written down. John Challis couldn't make it tonight, but he's my predecessor by some 50 years who gave Robin his job. His name has come up, but I think it's worth mentioning. He really would have loved to be here, but he couldn't. Patria Ladgrove, whose name's already come up, Jonica and Lisa Needham, some of those radio producers. Emma Morris put together the video and slides that you've been seeing. The amazing musicians from Bach Academy Australia, who are going to play again in a moment while we move out into the foyer. And to all of our listeners, you are the reason that we are here. And finally, one more time to all of our speakers for this evening, Fiona Stanley, Norman Swan, Lauren Clark, our remarkable MC, Richard Glover. I can't believe how well we've kept to time. And our leaders, manager of Radio National, Dina Rosendorf, and our head of audio, Ben Latimer, for their encouragement and support of tonight. Thanks, everyone, and let's have a drink.
We thank Jonathan Webb. And a round of applause, maybe even, with my bad knees, a standing ovation for Robin Williams. What an achievement. What an achievement. Please go and enjoy a drink.
Thank God it's Wednesday.
Thank God it's Wednesday.
Been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.